Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Investment advice provided on the following program is on an individual basis. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation for any investment and should carefully evaluate before investing. This is your Real Estate Today on News Talk 1110 WBT.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the show, Your Real Estate Today. Happy Saturday! It's my favorite day to spend with you talking about my favorite subjects and hopefully yours if you've been around for a while. We're going to talk some real estate today, anything having to do with it from a legal perspective. We got Brenna Heller here with the Costner Law Firm, your mortgage and things going on in the house. And I'm going to talk today about what it takes to win a deal or what you should look for in an offer. All right, so we've got a lot going on. Of course, Sandy Dickinson with Cross Country Mortgage is here in our first segment as well to give us the update and share some facts with us. And if you want to see, I'm having a bad hair day. If you get online, not much hair, but yet I look a little bit like I have a mohawk for some reason. I don't know why. All the gray hairs just will not cooperate today. So if you get on our YouTube channel at Jamison Realty, you can enjoy laughing at me. All right, so before we get started, I just want you all to know that I am the owner of Jamison Realty, Jamison Property Management, and Jamison Property Investments. We work with buyers and sellers in this market. We have a location in Matthews and one in Gaston County, but we go all over in North and South Carolina. So if you're an investor, buyer, seller, or need help with management, that's why we're here. But today, we're not talking about me. We're talking about stuff doing with real estate. So here we go. First of all, I want to give you the market overview. Every month, the new information comes out, and it is quite interesting. Quite interesting. And I'm going to give you mostly comparisons of last March to this March. If you look at listings, last March, there were 6,012 listings on the market. This March, there are only 5,523. Listings are down 8%. Wow. Closed sales. Get this. And here's what this means. Last March, there were 4,542. This March, 4,746. Which means whatever houses are out there are getting absorbed very, very quickly if they're out for sale. All right, listen to this. Days on market cumulative. Last March, we're averaging 55. This March, 27. It's a decrease of 50% cumulative days on market. Average list price is up 13.4% from last year to $394,000. Average sales price is up 17% to $370,706. And here's where it starts getting hairy. Inventory of homes for sale last March, 9,183. Still very few in the spring market. This March, 2,733 homes on the market. That is a decrease of 70%. Oh my. And last, months of inventory, which means if no new houses came on the market, how fast would our inventory get absorbed? 0.6 months. So we're at about 16 to 17 days. Oh my. As compared to last year, which was 2.1 months. So it is down 71%. If you're thinking about selling, you you should think harder.
I wish I had some more stuff to sell.
I'm just like, I look at the stats and I'm just amazed, right? I'm amazed. All right. So I'm going to start the what does it take to win part of this segment. And I met with my sales team. There are six others on my sales team at Jamison. And we work with buyers and sellers and investors all day long. All right. And I'm just going to tell you, we came up with a much larger list, but I really wanted to boil it down for you and some things that it takes. If you're a buyer and you want to win in multiple offer, what does it take to win? And, you know, overall and the over-encompassing view, the number one thing is you have to work with a real estate agent that understands the market. You have got to understand what is happening right now and what is going on. If you don't understand that, that agent is going to waste your time and money. If you don't have an agent that you're working with that understands what's going on. Now, I want to tell you something that's very personal. I do believe that the work that we have and the blessings that we have are truly a blessing from the Lord and not as a result of random chance. I do believe that we have to do our part, though, and work hard. That blessing comes with hard work. And right now, our business in a down market compared to last year is up 20%. So we are doing the work and we understand the market. Also, it's about communication. We communicate till our ears fall off or their ears fall off. That's probably a better way to say it, right? Communication is really key in being able to win. Here's something you have to do. You got to call the agent for the listing and ask them what their sellers need. Other than money is the script. What is it that the seller is looking for? Always ask that. The next thing, fill out the contract correctly, completely, fully, with the right information. I mean all of it. All means all. Do that. Being responsive. If the other agent calls you with a question about your offer, pick up the phone, even if it's 5:01 p.m. on a Sunday. That's what it takes to win. And Sandy, this one is yours. It says, having strong lender communication with the selling agent in your letter and being and having your finances in order. What is having your finances in order?
What does that mean?
Yes.
That means right now that everybody wants conventional loans or cash sales. So you need good credit. You need a down payment, and we need to verify your income. So nobody wants an FHA. I won't say nobody, but the most desirable offers are conventional, not FHA, not VA, not USDA, and definitely not down payment assistance loans. They're not granting people those contracts. So get into your lender early, check your credit score, make sure you have your down payment. And let's make sure that your debt ratio is in order so that you can qualify probably for more than the asking price because there's multiple offers right now.
Right. So here I'm going to plug Sandy Dickinson with Cross Country Mortgage. What she does is she calls the listing agent and says, hey, Sally's offer and her letter are valid. I've seen everything. All she needs now is a house. Right?
True.
That's a big deal. Right? All right, we've got 45 seconds. Can you give us a quick mortgage update? Sorry, I took up too much time.
Okay, very quick. So rates are a little bit steady right now, but watch out for next month. mid-May, we're probably going to see some inflation fears. CNBC tried to talk everybody out. They dedicated a show to tell people that there was a housing bubble and that they shouldn't buy. You should buy. Their reasons are dispelled. They don't understand forbearance. They don't understand demand and supplies. And they don't understand the math affordability. It doesn't look like people were ready for COVID or the houses weren't, because there is lots with just one bedroom. They unfinished kitchens or whatever, but there's a good news is there's a lot of equity in houses. So we can help you with a cash out refi to pull some cash out and get those things updated and finished off.
Absolutely. If somebody, that's wonderful. If somebody needs to call you, how do they get you?
They call 704-577-0144.
577-0144, Sandy Dickinson, Cross Country Mortgage. We'll be right back with Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm, myself, Paul Jamison, the Show Your Real Estate Today here on News Talk 1110-993 WBT. We'll be right back.
The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Show Your Real Estate Today. Happy Saturday, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. We hope you're safe. Got the arm out the window and having a good day today. And so thank you for joining us. I'm Paul Jamison, your host with the Jamison Companies. That's Realty, Property Management, and Property Investments. Here with Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm. She is an attorney, so you need to listen to what she says. She does not speak Latin. She knows English. That's why we like having her on the show. Hey, Brenna, welcome back.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
We, before the segment ended, I was going to finish up just what does it take to win? And there's just, we talked about communicating with the agent, understanding the market, calling the agent, filling out the contract, being responsive, having your finances in order, making it easy for the buyer agent and the seller, and your reputation. It takes to win, because if you have a reputation of not getting deals done and not closing, you're not going to win. And here, if you don't listen to anything else today, is a nugget of information I'm going to give to you that works. All right? What does it take to win? Put in a backup offer. Statistically, 35 to 40%, let's just call it a third, of the offers in multiple offer fall through. If you've got that backup offer ready to go, signed by the seller, you immediately step into, when that contract is terminated, the number one position. If you want that house, that's the way to get it. Now, let's say you trot around and you find another one and your backup hasn't been accepted. You cancel it. And you get the earnest money that you put in deposit at Costner back. Okay? So just think about that. All right? A couple other things. Just make sure you tailor the offer to the seller and be flexible. And the more cash you put down, the more cash you put at risk under due diligence, which we're going to talk about next, the stronger chance you have, and if you take appraisal and any concerns about it off the table. Because sometimes appraisals don't catch up to the market. They're starting to, that's making me happier, but, you know, sometimes they don't. Okay. All right. So, speaking of due diligence is basically the time and the money that is used to put a home in what I call layaway, so that you can examine it, get your inspections done, negotiate repairs, and do other things, but can walk away for any reason, and that money stays with the seller. So, Brenna, there are some exceptions to that rule, yes?
There certainly are, like most rules.
Yeah. So in your view, what kind of scenarios are there where a buyer can get their due diligence money back?
It's pretty limited, but a buyer is entitled to get their due diligence money back if the seller breaches the contract.
Okay. And what would be a condition that a seller would breach a contract under?
Well, for instance, if the seller is unable to provide marketable title, which is required in the standard North Carolina offer to purchase and contract, if the seller is unable to close for any foreseeable or unforeseeable reason based on the closing date and, of course, that 14-day extension, if the seller has done anything possibly to impair the property, to cause damage or even to cause damage or impair the title.
Right. I would say that the times, you're right, the times that I have seen it go back, there has been an appraisal addendum is one, where there's an addendum I actually had drafted by Costner that we use that says if the home for any reason does not appraise, the due diligence money becomes refundable. We don't use it that much these days because houses are going a little bit outside that window and buyers need to be prepared to pony up. Let's just put it that way. Pony up means pay for the difference. For those of you who don't know what that means, most of you do because it's kind of a Southern thing. All right. So I have also seen where and this was a one or two instance like you talked about where the seller took some things they shouldn't have taken from the home that were in the contract and refused to give them back. They were in breach. And
yeah, imagine you see that a lot with fixtures, especially.
Yes, yes, and appliances, or even sometimes very silly things, and sometimes sheds have been given away and people have picked them up, but yet they're included in the contract somewhere. And there's been two instances that I can think of where the seller just changed their mind. Said, I'm not selling. I'm not signing. I'll pay whatever damage. And that they not only do they owe the due diligence back, they also owed the real estate commission to both agents, as well as all the expenses that the buyer had incurred.
Yeah, and potentially additional out-of-pocket expenses.
And,
exactly right.
So it was quite interesting. So title issues could be heirs that refuse to sign or a blemish on the title or an old lien that can't get taken off, things like that?
That's exactly right. And with these high due diligence fees that we're seeing that you mentioned, it's especially important for buyers and for sellers to understand really what's at stake because that due diligence fee is paid to the seller. It's not held by the law firm or by a broker in escrow. It's paid directly to the seller. So the seller gets it right at the beginning of the contract. It's important to understand exactly what's at risk. And a title issue is a big one that people sometimes forget about because the standard in our industry is most people, and as they should, feel pretty comfortable accepting insurable title. But that is not what our contract requires the seller to provide. So if the seller is unable to provide marketable title and only insurable title, they are still technically in breach of the contract. Mm. And as you mentioned, that can include an old deed of trust or mortgage that has not been canceled of record, even potentially if it has in fact been paid off, but just not canceled in the register of deeds. A title company may be willing to provide insurance over a blemish like that, but technically that makes the title insurable and not marketable.
Right. Yeah. Marketable and insurable. That's an interesting clarification. And most of the time, it's usually some old deed of trust or an old home equity line that that a bank or the attorney didn't cancel. That seems to be the biggest one.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. We see it a lot with old deeds of trust or mortgages that get paid off as part of refinance transactions that just the bank never follows up and files that technically required satisfaction in the register of deeds. Without that recorded satisfaction, the lien really is still present on the title.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a tough one to chase down, but I think it happens quite a bit. you know, earnest money.
Yeah, especially fun when the lender no longer exists.
Oh, yes, or they've merged with another bank and it's been like 200 years. And, you know,
right.
The Bank of our Lord Jesus Christ was the one that actually did the equity line.
Yeah, nearly impossible to get
yes,
that.
True,
from
true.
Them, I must
yes,
say.
Yes, we do try to resurrect those things around Easter, though. Sorry, that was a little Easter joke. I didn't mean to put it there. But anyway, so earnest money, however, does also have an opportunity to get refunded in that same scenario. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. The earnest money comes back to the buyer. Unlike due diligence, the buyer does get their earnest money back if they cancel the contract within the due diligence period.
Right.
If you're outside of the due diligence period and then we have a seller breach, the buyer would then also be entitled to the earnest money in addition to the due diligence and potentially any other of the out-of-pocket expenses we discussed.
That's right. That's always good to have agreement with that. All right, so we've got a lot more to come with Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm, myself, Paul Jamison with the Jamison Companies on this Saturday, the Show Your Real Estate Today here on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Don't go anywhere.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Welcome back to Show Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison here with the Jamison Companies, Realty, Property Management, and Property Investments, here with Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm. Brenna, if someone has a question or wants to have you look at helping them with a real estate transaction, how do they get in touch with you?
You can call me directly, 704-900-1134.
704-900-1134. I have called that number many times. So I use it. So don't hesitate to use it. She is very good and very responsive. All right. So one of the things, Brenna, I wanted to talk about today is as our inventory gets older and as some of the older homes turn over, either as a family or something that's been in the family for a long time, or as we look at areas that are now emerging that have older homes, there are a lot of shared driveways.
You're right.
I'm seeing a lot of them, a lot of them. It's very common, and you shouldn't shy away from it, but you need an agreement, right?
Yes, it absolutely helps. And it absolutely helps, too. Some are not as apparent from just visually looking at the property than you would think. So a survey certainly helps to clear that up as well.
Absolutely. But it can sure be a great way to make sure you have no issues, right? No discrepancies.
Absolutely, yeah. We always look in our title work to see if there is a shared driveway agreement or some sort of easement agreement, permissive use agreement already on file within the chain of title. But if we don't see one of those, then we're always going to recommend having one created and recorded as part of the transaction that we're closing. A lot of times, too, you may have a lender who requires it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had several of those, and they're really not difficult. They're basically covering three aspects inside the agreement, right? Well, let's call it four. Who owns the driveway and where it is, meets and bounds and location, right? Who has access using the driveway? Homeowner A, B, or C, or D, if there are multiple people accessing that driveway. I've seen many, many people accessing a driveway on those before. And it clarifies the rules around accessing the driveway and what happens if someone blocks the driveway, like Tommy's tow truck is coming to take it away. Calgon, take me away. And then last, this isn't required, but you can also have, Brenna, a maintenance agreement, right?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, any shared driveway agreement that's worth its weight has some sort of provision that outlines how and who shares the costs of maintenance and repair when needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen, like, for example, I have a shared driveway with someone. We do not have an agreement. I mean, it's been 20-something years. We should have an agreement. I have an easement, but not an agreement. And I've been dealing with this guy for all those years, and he called me last week and said, hey, we need some gravel to put on the driveway. And I go, okay, and we split it. And it's just been that way for 20 years. That's not the right way to do it, though. Honestly.
No, I'd say that's certainly not the formal way to do it. It would be very hard and difficult to enforce an agreement like that. Whereas if you have it in writing, and especially if it's recorded in the Register of Deeds, it'd be very hard to argue against an agreement like that.
Yeah. It's a, hey, you, we need gravel agreement.
Yes, I believe that's the legal term.
Is that Latin? Hey, you.
Hey,
I think
you.
It is. I think it's a legal term that's been translated into Southern. What do you think, TJ? You think that's it? Okay. All right. TJ's our producer, and he is a very patient man. You need to listen to his show, though, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tell him what time, TJ.
6:35. I also wanted to let you know I took 2 years of Latin, so that you're right.
It is.
Hey, you is
hey,
Latin.
Hey, you is Latin? Yeah. Hey, you et al. And now it's, hey, you, your name's Al?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, all right.
I think I remember Agricola in via est.
And that means that your pita roll is ready?
Yes. Precisely. No, it means the farmer is in the road.
You know, I took German in grade school. And there was a young woman that used to work for me. This is a sidebar, has nothing to do with real estate. She used to work for me, and she was meeting her boyfriend's parents for the first time. They were coming over from Germany. And I said, listen, I'm going to tell you how to impress these people. I said, here, you got to memorize this. I want you to say, Guten Tag, ich habe ein. And she's like, she practiced it all week. So she went and she met these people, nice as could be, and she said, you know, Guten Tag, ich habe ein, and smiled real big. And they both looked at each other. She came back and she hit me because what it means is, hello, I have an egg in German. So it's the only thing I remembered. So she stayed with me a while longer. But anyway, it's kind of funny. All right, so why did I do that? All right, seller financing. Okay, the only reason this is a subject is because it's something I'm dealing with right now with Brenna. And so I thought it was great to say, you know, a lot of people think seller financing is dead. It is not at all dead. And it's something, if you do it the right way in certain circumstances, depending on if buyer and seller have a meeting of minds, that's worth doing. Right, Brenna?
Yeah, absolutely. It's 100% about the parties and what works for them and what they have come to mutual agreement upon.
All right. And it's recorded at the courthouse, right?
Yes. In order to be a valid first lien mortgage, yes.
Yeah. And in most cases, when they're seller financing, you're charging a little bit more than the average interest rate right now. And And you see that a lot. There's also what's called hard money lending, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about if somebody wants to buy something from you and you want cash flow in your life at a good rate, it's something good to do. So what would you put in it, Brenna? What would go inside that seller financing?
So we, as the closing attorney, would prepare two specific documents on any seller financing deal. One would be a note, a promissory note, which outlines the promise of the buyer to pay back the seller slash lender and the terms of that repayment.
Okay.
The second instrument is a deed of trust, and that's the one that gets recorded at the county registry, and that actually is the security instrument that grants the property as collateral for the loan. That's the instrument that puts the lender in priority position over other liens and would allow for a foreclosure action if there was a default.
Okay, if there is a default, can you put into the seller financing that they don't have to foreclose to take it back?
I have never seen that done before. Typically, it is a foreclosure action. There is something called a deed in lieu of foreclosure, where
right.
the buyer simply grants a deed back to that seller slash lender instead of going through the formal foreclosure process.
Right. Right. That's kind of where I was getting at, is that there is a way to do it without because filing a foreclosure, I don't know about today, it used to take about 6 months. To do it.
It's timely and it can be costly as well. And of
right.
course, it does not bode well for any buyer's credit either.
No, it does. It's unhappy. Well, we're going to come back to Brenna here after the break. We're going to talk a little bit more about seller financing. And then we're going to talk a little about disclosures, if we have a minute, too. And I will also finish up on my first segment, which is, what do you look for in an offer when you choose one in a multiple offer situation? The show, Your Real Estate Today, Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm, myself, Paul Jamison. More to come. We'll be right back on News Talk 1110993 WBT.
The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Welcome back to the show, Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison here with the Jamison Companies. That's Realty, Property Management, Property Investments here with Brenna Heller with the Costner Law Firm. We're talking about seller financing and why do it and do we still see that? And we do. So we talked about shared driveways. That's going to be more and more common. But you did say that you put together a document or a promissory note, and then you put together the deed of trust, which is recorded at the courthouse. And you can avoid a foreclosure in this by doing what's called a deed in lieu, which means you trade the deed basically in lieu of the remaining balance of the note and not having to go to foreclosure. There have got to be some advantages, certainly in some situations to the buyer. I mean, it's a little easier, right? You're not going through all the rigmarole you'd normally go through with a lender. There's probably less papers to sign, less trees to kill on that closing, right? It's quicker, right? But you still do title work and all those other things, don't you, Brenna?
Absolutely. The entire process would be the same, except for the fact that instead of dealing with either a private lender, third party, or an institutional lender, a bank, your lender is your seller. And it's,
right.
instead of having a 100-page loan package to sign, you'll have about 10 pages to sign.
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is you're not going through the same hundreds of pages because they're selling the loan. The reason why most of the time the seller does it is they want the cash flow. They want the payments. Or there's an interim period, like it's like a 5-year loan with a 30-year amortization schedule that the seller says, I'm fine to finance this for 5 years. I'll just whatever principal, which would be teeny, applies. When you go to a bank and get this refinanced, you just take out whatever's left and send me a check. one of the reasons that I see it also as an advantage is you, on whatever the down payment is, that becomes taxable as a capital gain. But I talked to my CPA, and the CPA said, I'm mirroring his words, I'm not a CPA, please consult your CPA for more information, but I had a good night's sleep last night, is that at your gains then are taxable only as you receive the payments. So those gains on the principal amount only come and become taxable as you receive them. So you're spreading out your capital gains in a longer period of time. You have to pay it on the initial deposit at full boat, but reality is it's not on the whole sale. It's only on those portions that you receive. I like that because capital gains are high. And guess what, folks? They're going to get higher, a lot higher. So, you know, it's a good way to make it work for you. All right. So it also keeps the deal together in some cases too, right, Brenna? Sometimes there's a circumstance that needs to be cleared in order for that seller to be, or the buyer to be able to finance it in a more traditional fashion with a bank. So that's good. But I think the biggest thing you said would be red flag. Make sure you record that deed of trust at the courthouse.
Absolutely. It has to be recorded in the Register of Deeds to have that priority.
And it needs to be in
writing. So if the buyer took out any other loans later after the seller financing, you would want to make sure that that seller financing deed of trust was in first position in case they defaulted or stopped making payments.
Right. An oral agreement is not going to be good here, right?
No, that will not suffice.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. All right, so let me go back to where in the beginning I talked too much about other stuff and I didn't get through what it takes and what should you look for in an offer. If you're a seller right now and you're staring at, like this weekend, we had one that had 19 offers. Okay. Oh, by the way, just for grins, Brenna. So this was not, I'm talking about a house that's in the upper twos, right? Maybe low threes. The due diligence fees is that non-refundable deposit we talked about to put the home in layaway. On a home in that price range, upper twos, low threes, this is just our team, the Jameson team. What do you think is the most amount of due diligence money we have seen, that non-refundable deposit, on that type of priced home?
Well, I can tell you the highest I've seen was close to the 40K mark.
Yep. We saw a non-refundable deposit of $30,000 on a home priced around $300,000. That's a pretty good reason that they're not going to back out.
Mm-hmm.
They lose that $30,000.
And for reference, you'd usually expect to see, what, 500 to 1,000 in due diligence?
In the old days, you'd see 1,500 maybe, or even up to 1%. And that'd be, like, competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're seeing huge numbers. And so what we do is we demand that those funds come certified. We're not taking a personal check, or we're not taking coins rolled up, or we're not taking, you know, $1 bills.
You won't accept small bills in a briefcase?
Nah, not today.
No
Bitcoin either. We're not taking that.
No fun with that.
Yeah. We've been asked.
I'm sure.
Anyway, okay, so what do you look for in an offer besides strong due diligence? These days, if you're going way over asking price, there's what's called an appraisal waiver. An appraisal waiver says if the appraisal happens outside the due diligence period, and it doesn't appraise, that buyer is going to make up the difference. They're going to pay whatever that gap difference is. My second thing was a strong buyer. Okay, what does a strong buyer mean? And you remember in the first segment, we talked about having their finances in order, having a good solid lender, paying cash. That's a strong buyer. Somebody who, again, puts a due diligence fee forward that says, other than the house falling in, we're buying it, kind of thing. All right. Next, what do I look for in an offer? And this goes for the agent and for the buyer themselves. If you're the seller, they understand the market. They understand what it takes to win. They understand what it takes to communicate. They understand what it takes to come to the table. Just like what Sandy said earlier, if they need down payment assistance, they don't understand the market. They don't. Because right now, it's unfortunate. It's very difficult if you need down payment assistance to get a house. I'm just saying. That's the truth. Doesn't mean it's fair. It just means that's the truth. All right? Next is you need a real lender, a live one, not an internet one. If you want to win, don't go to Quicken and bring a Quicken approval letter. Because you call Quicken, you never get the same person twice at Quicken. And they're not, their letters and their reputation is not as strong as someone local who has touched, felt, and seen the documents that the buyer is bringing forward. You need to bring out your best terms and price out of the gate. You need to tailor it to the seller. And you need to ask who is the agent and what kind of production do they do. If they're a rookie agent, more than likely there's going to be mistakes and it may not close. And that's the thing. You want it to close. All right, Brenna, how do they get in touch with you if they have more questions?
Call me directly, 704-900-1134.
All right. You can always reach us at Jamison at 846-DUNN, 846-3663, or on the web at myjamisonhomes.com. God bless. Take care. Talk to you next week.